Okay. There's a new link. Great. Okay.
So for anyone who's watching this, the whole thing sort of changed because my Streamlabs wouldn't connect, so we had to do a different link. So this first probably 5 minutes is going to be me calibrating it all, so I'll try put a timestamp in to rectify that. So yeah, this is going to be the second Landian Philosophy of Bitcoin lecture, which I'd like completely planned everything exactly the same as last time on Streamlabs, exact same amount of, you know, clicks, everything, like, to the T, and technology just doesn't want to play ball, so yeah, everything's just messed up. Okay, I'm hoping that some people have like joined. Okay, there's three people watching. We're sort of gonna wait sort of 5 minutes because the link change was really annoying. So the one that everyone was waiting on, people are still in that one, which is just super frustrating. Okay, some people are slowly coming in, which is good. Yeah, I do apologize for this. It's frustrating. Okay. As to not sort of drag this. My Streamlabs. Okay, I'll minus that down. My Streamlabs up. Okay, so we're finally getting a few more viewers, so hopefully people will sort of funnel into this one. I don't know if there's actually a way to edit the videos, the live videos afterwards, so I do apologize for the first 3 minutes of this video is basically just me trying to figure things out. Alright. Okay. Yeah, so welcome to the second lecture on the Landian philosophy of Bitcoin, Nick Land's philosophy of Bitcoin, as he's written about in his text, Cryptocurrent. This lecture is primarily tackling chapters 1 and 2, of which there are 6. Now, some people have sort of asked me, why am I not doing 6 lectures? Simply because I'm not. I think 4 will cover it enough. There's no real specific reason as to why. I am very briefly just going to check if people are still waiting on that other live stream because you know, I know that is sort of frustrating for them. It's there. Okay, there you go. So anyone who's in the other one, who's waiting for the other one, the link is there for them now. So we should be able to just get going on this one. So can just a couple of people comment in the chat just to make sure that they can hear me, because that would be another catastrophe if you couldn't. Obviously, there's a little bit of a delay, so I'll have to wait for your messages to come through. Technology was made to make everything easier, of course. Okay. Cool. There we go. Can hear you fine. Awesome. Right. Let's get going. So, this one is titled Cryptocurrencies Critique, which is the title for the for chapter one for Land in Cryptocurrent. And this one really will be dealing with... So I gave a brief overview in the first lecture about basically the basics of Kantian critique, the basics of Bitcoin, and the basics of the overlap. This whole lecture, so these sections one and two, really are dealing with cryptocurrency as critique. And in that sense, it's, you know, as you can imagine, cryptocurrency in relation to Kantian critique. So diving in, really what I've done here in these slides is basically the short excerpts from Cryptocurrent, and then I'm going to go, I've got my notes and I'll go into them, because they obviously are extremely dense and complicated in the way Land has sort of phrased them. So beginning here, 0.1, Land is basically stating, 0.1, this is sort of just trailing off from the last lecture. So he's stating this was his overview of the chapters. So chapter one provides an introduction. It takes a short Satoshi Nakamoto text, which I believe is just 9 pages, might even be shorter, as its point of departure in order to capture Bitcoin as lava. Now, the footnote for this is lava is a mask and a cryptid enfolded potentiality. And in sort of Deleuzean terms, what we're talking about is in terms of a lava here is, as Land has said, a cryptic enfolded potentiality. But basically what he's saying is that Land is reading Satoshi Nakamoto's Bitcoin peer-to-peer paper, Bitcoin as a peer-to-peer network paper, as a philosophical work of critique. An extremely short work of critique. But in Land unfolds this cryptic potentiality and shows how much is folded into it. So 0.11, documentation has crossed a new threshold of mechanization. Bitcoin the documentary is thus an expose in which nothing is hidden unless behind a fully manifested mask. Now, there's just constant sort of, to use the word again, cryptic and hidden things and almost hermetically concealed notions within any time we're talking about Bitcoin, and especially with Land talking about cryptocurrent. And this notion of masks, of folding, of hiding, of concealment, is a notion which both runs through Kantian critique and also sort of the trajectory of Kantian critique when we begin to talk about Heidegger and this notion of things which are concealed, but it's only in that understanding of the language which allows them to be revealed. So in that sense, we're always dealing with the Kantian sort of dialectic, not Kantian dialectic, a Kantian form of communication, in that understanding that there are things which are cryptically concealed and cryptically we can't understand except from a certain sort of philosophical positions. So beginning with the chapter itself, there is a 1.01, there is a future, perhaps even a probable one, in which this short text of just 64 words has the status of a pre-Socratic fragment, at least minutely explained by multiple philosophical schools determined to extract every last micro flicker of its significance. Now, this is a really huge statement for, I guess, anyone involved in philosophy, because really what Land is stating is that with the beginning of Bitcoin, we're quite literally beginning a new era of philosophical significance, right? That notion of absolute time that we were talking about, another, almost another Copernican revolution, but it's almost the Copernican revolution of the philosophy of economics, but at the same time, that philosophy of economics in relation to Kantian critique. And one sort of could be mistaken then in viewing the technological innovation of Bitcoin, or even something such as Erbit, the representations, you know, as such, the technological innovation is simply that representation of the world. Take them as the phase change itself. But it's actually really this critical form that we're looking at in that in-between sense between the inside and the outside, and not one or the other, but the communication of one from the other. But when I state communication, there's obviously a big dialogue between communication and production
in, shall we say, post-Kantian thought, in the works of Deleuze especially. Really, we're talking about production when we're talking about cryptocurrency, and that productive intensity, which isn't a lack, but I'll get into this Deleuzian terminology. So it's the form of this change, which, you know, takes in its utilization of these critical bridges between the empirical, the phenomenal, and the noumenal, and that brings us into a new era where there is something which is being developed as absolute. Now we'll get further into the sort of Kantianism of it, obviously, in this lecture. So 1.03 begins Bitcoin as a new electronic cash system, or innovative techno-commercial, i.e. techonomic, technological economic, synthesis, a machine in the rich rather than narrowly technical sense, because it encompasses incentives. Now, you know, as soon as we're talking about machines, we're talking about this sort of Deleuze-Guattarian machinism. And a machine for Deleuze and Guattari is sort of an abstractly cybernetic means of looking at things. We're talking about inputs and outputs. We're talking about production in itself. We're talking about production for its own sake. And in the sense of a machinism, is the production of production, or everything is a production, even anti-production is a production. So when we're talking about techno-economic machinism, we're talking about technology in cahoots with this sort of economic first. So technology in the phenomenal sense, in this productive relationship with the economy in that noumenal sense, in a productive machinism, which is forming something greater than both. So someone stated, speculative philosophy of crypto whilst it crashes into the physical and metaphysical rocks of market realities. Awesome. Yeah, so as soon as, I will just mention on that, as soon as the first lecture on Lance Bitcoin came out, I think that was when the top was in, you know, well, the local top was in for Bitcoin. So something's obviously happening. But something's always happening. I mean, that's a form of equilibrium. We could probably talk about those market forces in some sense later down the line. So just to continue that quote, and also for an initial two-step abstract specification of its operational principle as a fully peer-to-peer or true network, which is itself succinctly defined through subtraction or independence from any kind of trusted third party. The deletion of third parties or quasi-transcendent overseers, as revealed retrospectively in this artificial future, has been socio-historical process and not mere conceptual speculation. So There's something really interesting here, and the one point we can finally draw a very clear connection between this extremely late land and one of the earliest land things we have, which is that one clip from the documentary, I believe it's called Heaven and Hell, with Young Land saying that top-down systems will become flat. And this is actually sort of what's going on here, except in a far richer sense, in the form of moving down from some beginning at the bottom empirically hierarchical form of transcendence, where the third party overseer, as Land states them, is in abstract that god or that controller or the ruler or something completely above that predefined box, into a horizontal flat network, which is in itself transcendental in the Kantian sense, in the way that everything is imminent, and the only thing which there is forms of separation, but those forms of separation are simply beholden to certain machines. So man has his own, shall we say, bordering, which seems to him to illustrate shall we say, an illusory form of up and down or levels, right? So for man, you have those cognitive apparatus, the cognitive faculties such as senses and sensibility, but those themselves don't actually form the transcendence and the beyond and the above as actual things in themselves. They are mere, they are simply forms which are beholden to the way in which man perceives the sensible world, and so they aren't of that entire imminent flat horizontal network of machinism itself. They are simply beholden to man. So in that way, what's happening in the terms of the development of something absolute is sort of the erasure of these barriers, in the sense of being able to find, you know, being able to find a sort of a pure epistemology which we can work with from ourselves, but also coming back into us, right? That sounds very complicated, but it's, once again, it's that sort of epistemological bridge where we're forming something absolute, and the immanent is no longer falsely separated for us by this development of immanent machinism. Well, not the development of it, the revealing of it, right? And this is, you know, this is the notion of cryptography. So, you know, that notion of independence from any kind of trusted third party was something that I emphasized in the lecture. And also, just to emphasize it in Land's point here, the deletion of third parties or quasi-transcendent overseers. So Bitcoin, you know, as I sort of stressed last week in a very dramatic form, but just to get the point across, Bitcoin completes the death of God and leads us from salvation itself, from the notion that there is some form of there is some form of beyond salvation, right? But the idea of a beyond is salvation in itself, is the idea that there could ever be salvation. And I don't specifically mean salvation in a religious or belief context, but Bitcoin in that manner, say, you know, reveals that need for a third party trust, a beyond trust, to be completely gone, and therefore you don't need salvation, because the process unto which something is verifiably or epistemologically absolute is within that machinism itself and working back in itself, building its own form of legitimization, which eventually compounds into Bitcoin equals Bitcoin, and that actually makes sense. It doesn't at the moment. I do understand that. And one thing, you know, I was thinking about this lecture last night, and it's one thing that I think maybe needs to be emphasized, and perhaps, you know, some people might say, well, this just sort of reveals your inability to teach it well or articulate it correctly. But one thing I would say, and I mean, especially you come to bash heads with this problem when I was doing the seven lectures on the Critique of Pure Reason, one problem that you immediately come into contact with when you're talking about and when you're theorizing about specifically Kantian trajectories, beginning from that Kantian acceptance of the knowability of unknowability, right? The, okay, well, I've accepted that there is, that the world I'm given is a representation, and there's a you know, a sensible veil unto which I have to view the world through. So there is, as Kant sort of makes clear, it's not that we can say the world is otherwise, but it's also that we can't say the world is the way it is. And so we're immediately put into this sort of amber of unknowability. So there's always a point where you have to say, well, we can't truly explain what that is, because when you're critiquing pure reason, you're critiquing reason which doesn't have a correlation with the sensibility. So you're into the realms of pure conceptualization. And in that manner, the extent to which something can be described or articulated becomes a very loose task. And admittedly, perhaps at times I won't be able to do the best job of it, because it is an extremely tricky thing to do, is to be able to explain something without the sort of empirical, phenomenal, evidential structure that we'd usually rely on to bolster some claims or legitimize some claims. But as soon as you are talking about something which is working on the noumenal level or the thing in itself, the evidential structures that we use to legitimize or vindicate our claims that used to be reliant on, well, are reliant on the spatio-temporal framework for their justification, right? X happens, there's X and then there's Y, so X causes Y. That entire realm of causation and linearity is no longer being able to be utilized. And so we have to begin before those conditions, right? Back to that thing, the point in the first lecture that Land makes is that Bitcoin comes before signs. So we no longer have that language of signification to be able to explain any of this, right? Okay, you could say, well, that's one very well-rounded way of saying that you what you're talking is complete conjecture, and you know, you don't really know what you're on about. Now, I've spent a lot of time with this text, and there's immediately just going to be points where you go, we run into this problem of being able to attend to that which we know we do not know. This problem is taken up very well by, obviously, a number of philosophers, Heidegger, Levinas, obviously Kant. Anyway, so that's something I wanted to get put out there first. But back to this problem of, you know, Bitcoin abstractly leads us from needing this external salvation. Now, the external salvations that the ideas of a beyond that we have for monetary value are completely on a sort of, should we say, overcoded in that Deleuze-Guattarian sense form of signification. Right, these cultural, empirical cultural signifiers of the mint, the nation, the royal mint, in God we trust, quite literally. These are all bolstered on a form of cultural logic which itself is a feedback loop within the empirical world. Now, this point of being led from salvation, in the sense that we're no longer beholden to the faculties of the flesh in their interpretation of that data which is coming in from the outside, but have developed a translation device between the inside and the outside. Okay, so once again, it's back to that point that you have the value itself. You're not beholden to the money in the sense of its signification. There is something behind the money which is the value itself, and we're finally able to translate that into an absolute language which itself is completely, absolutized into a successive blockchain, which itself is decentralized and verified by this decentralized horizontal transcendental network. There is no above. Someone is saying they're salvation from physicality. Maybe you could rephrase that and say salvation from empirical justification, right? Because if you're always looking for empirical justification, which is itself physicality, physicality itself is entirely reliant on that on the experience which comes from conditions. So it's entirely reliant on the a priori forms of sensibility needed to be a human, which is space and time. For something to be physical, it has to be in space, and space has to be in time. Therefore, you're reliant on a conditioned experience. Bitcoin itself, this is the Land's theorization, is prior to the conditioned reality. So in the sense that it's salvation from physicality, it's the removal of the salvation which is physicality. That conditioned experience itself allows for there to ever be the idea of a salvation. If you have that conditioned experience, the projection is that there can be something outside or beyond that experience. The point for Kant is that conditioned experience is simply, this is very rough and not in the nicest way to put it, is a box within the whole of experience itself, which itself has conditions, which simply doesn't allow you to attend to the entirety of experience, right? So you're beholden to space and time, but that doesn't mean that there is a beyond. That only means there is an illusory beyond for man. The rest of it is imminent and transcendental. What's going on out there doesn't mean it's beyond. It just means that you don't have access to that that metaphysical form of ontological existence. I know that's a bunch of continental buzzwords thrown in to save my ass, but there you go. So we can, after almost 25 minutes, we can move on to the second slide. So The 1.05, to write using links is to participate in a literal machine in multiple senses. Therefore, it represents a death of metaphor. Now, the death of metaphor in the sense of the death of Derrida is probably something I imagine Land adores. There is no longer a debate with respect to the problems of semantic signification or the problems of communication, right? The inability to communicate is no longer a problem of anthropocentric sort of tongue twisting and the reliance on the signification or the sign, because what's coming is before the sign in the sense of value itself. So you no longer have these phenomenological debates about what we consider money to be in the sense of signification, because you're not saying that you've gone beyond that. You're saying that what's come has come before that in the sense of a transcendental value system. So it's one sort of productive, machinic inability to tether to the correct machinic linkage. So the death of the metaphor, you know, the death of that sort of empirical appropriation of what money is in terms of value. This is that entire phenomenological form of constraint is now gone, because we're not beginning from that conditioned experience. You know, maybe I've said some stuff about Derrida there that is a tiny bit wrong, because I know he is taking his beginning from Heidegger, and of course, you know, he's also, many people would say that with Derrida, phenomenology did die itself. But the I think for Land there is an importance there is to get away from that constant conditioned metaphoric sensibility of money. Because that, what is that beholden to, except that to accept the quasi form of, or sorry, the sort of the conditioned experience. I know I will be repeating myself a lot with that notion, but that is what we're really moving away from here. In doing that, which is probably something we'll come to right at the end of all these lectures, is we're moving towards that notion of capital for Land, right? And we're moving away from the human as controller. So 1.07, and this is a really fantastic quote, which actually does link back to another quote of Land's, and I have seen that person's comment. I will just deal with that in a minute. So 1.07, the occurrence is outpacing its sense. So with occurrence, we're talking about temporality. We're talking about time overflowing sensibility in the manner of an older Land quote, I believe, from Fang Noumenna, where he states, we're doing things before they make sense. And if things are beginning before the conditions of experience, then in that sense pure time itself is overflowing sensibility, right? Sensibility is simply beholden to this transcendental value system we're talking about. A commenter there has said, Bitcoin is still appropriated money, though it has just been recirculated, a new appearance. The essence, however, has not changed. So this is really, I mean, in your comment there, you're outlining the what for Land is the huge point of his text Cryptocurrent, which is that, so there is, of course, this argument that you could say, you know, one thing I'm trying to make clear, and Land's trying to make clear, is that Bitcoin is something that has gone beyond the value system, whereby it's simply a value which is, you know, we've all agreed on this, therefore it has value in it, it's money, which is sort of the collective, basically, what all value is to a degree, right? We all say, well, that's worth something, therefore it is. But then when that comes to money, the money in itself isn't actually worth anything in terms of that original use value or exchange value or barter value. Money is worth something because we've all agreed, you know, it's one notation of money we've all agreed upon is worth a certain amount in terms of value. But that itself is basically beholden, once again, to that beyond, and the beyond being this sort of transcendent form of a nationalized bank or something along these lines. And I'm not saying that's literally beyond in terms of the God, but that is beyond in the terms of a trust to a third-party apparatus. Now, that doesn't change, as you've said, it doesn't change the actual essence of it in terms of, okay, you just have this, apparently you just have this appearance, right? So, firstly, the big first step is you remove that trusted outside. So you then move on to a completely decentralized flat network where there is no, it's not escrow, it's not, there's no, like, action one. Then to verify action one, there is another party who goes, yeah, they've given you that, so there you go. It is peer-to-peer, quite literally peer-to-peer. So there is no trusted third party who needs to come in and verify what's going on. Now, how this changed the essence is, this is why these are the importance of the Kantian critique, which I, briefly spoke about last time, okay, and we'll be speaking about more this time, is that once you have this conditioned experience, money, it's the money that we generally use, begins from conditioned experience. It begins both from this trusted third party in the sense of a human trusted third party who we all go, okay, we agree it's all worth this much, but it's all worth this much within the phenomenal world. Whereas when we're talking about in the language that you've used there, when we're talking about the essence of Bitcoin, we're talking about something that begins before this phenomenal signification and begins as a purely machinic process that is just reliant on an algorithmically machinic form of development, which then processes itself into a successive machinic allotment of blocks, which is then appropriated. It's prior, it's in the language of philosophy, always already prior to appropriation. I'll go through these one by one. Interesting. It's also a giant distributed Ponzi scheme. I think, right, so I'm sort of like, I would say no. Well, I wouldn't say no. I would quite literally say, like, no, that is wrong. However, I think a lot of people can see it as a scam, as a Ponzi, as whatever, simply because people are used to highly regulated markets. And it does reveal how easy, if you are someone such as Elon Musk, who simply just has a few million, 100 million, whatever followers, to abuse an unregulated market. Makes it very much seem like a Ponzi scheme, but it isn't when you look into it. Peer-to-peer systems are decentralized. Okay, this is a comment. I'm confused about that. Isn't it intersubjectivity? Are we sure it didn't put human at the center? Okay, it works like machinic unconscious, maybe, but isn't human at the center? I think much like... this is a getting into the complexities of like where the humans are placed. As soon as you are beginning prior to the conditioned experience, humans are immediately secondary to that experience. Because, okay, this notion of the human comes down to time. Everything comes down to time. Absolutely everything. The notion of a center is the implication of a beginning or a middle, or a start and an end, right? You're the thing which everything is revolving around. Now, for something to be in the middle of something, in the sense of sort of the primary mover or the primary interest of that thing, there has to be this sort of form of chronic time unto which the human begins something. And it continues, and they are sort of taking control. Now, that is once again that conditioned experience where you're reliant on space and time, because linearity of time can only happen in space, in that represented form of spatiotemporality. Once you're moving to before that, where you're moving on this notion of the outside of the production in itself, of this machinic reality, we're no longer working on that. What is to say the human is the center of something if the center is no longer, the center can no longer be? It's a very difficult thing to sort of visualize and understand, and hopefully I'll be able to use some stuff later in the lectures to articulate it. So can you please upload the first part? The first part is uploaded. It's simply called The Landing Philosophy of Bitcoin 0.01. I think it's the second to last video that's been put up. So So the occurrence is outpacing sense in that initial quote of, we're doing things before they make sense, because ultimately the linearity of our time, due to its very fact, it's almost sort of ironic that quote of the occurrence is outpacing its sense almost goes back to the Humean view of causation, in the sense of X does Y does Z, and we have absolutely no clue as to why, right? You can say that I lob this spoon and it hits the screen and there's a sound, right? X, Y, Z. And you could say that I throw the spoon, and because it hit this object, that is what made the sound. You can say that, but Hume's point, which then continues into say, you know, he's looked at it all wrong. Hume basically concludes in his form of causation that, well, we just don't really know why actually any of that is, and we have no cause to say why any of that is. Kant, of course, says, well, we're dealing with that, what you're dealing with is a representation, and we could or could not say that that is why things happen, but we actually have no real way of knowing why that is. So in the way of doing things before it makes sense, there is, of course, the theories that would say, well, the representational world, which is sort of placed, you know, that we're beholden to, is just because that's what we have to analyze the world, then we constrain the events happening in the world to that, in the sense that, well, what can you say of cause and effect, right? What can you say of cause and effect when you no longer have linear time? And this is the point of that Land made to me about free will and determinism. If you no longer have the notions of a past, present, and a future, so free will is what you do in it, you know, you have this free choice in the present, therefore that affects the future, and determinism is simply what happens in the past is just means that, you know, you're a cog in a machine and everything's rolling off, and then the present is already affected. Once you no longer have linear time in the past, the present, and the future, and things are just happening in a completely different way, what the hell does any of that mean? It doesn't. They no longer are questions, because time just doesn't work in that way. Someone has asked, is Bitcoin a part of the hyperreal? I would need to know what you mean by the hyperreal, because obviously there's a ton of definitions floating around for various things at the moment. So 1.08, Bitcoin loops back to close upon itself because it works and demonstrates that it works through actual perpetuation of its existence. Problems of self-reference are an operational virtue requiring positive achievement. The guiding principle is not conceptual comprehension, but machinic closure. So there's, in my reading of this, there's something huge going on in terms of philosophy. There is, in the sense that it loops back, it closes in on itself and perpetuates its own existence. We're almost derailing or railing onto itself the eternal return, in the sense of the alteration of the eternal return into a positive feedback loop, a positive machinic production thresher, right? Production of production of production of itself, which in itself is escaping a form of productive entropy unto which you just keep doing the same thing. Bitcoin as a value system is just continually producing itself, but at the same time producing the legitimization of its own conceptualized form of agreed upon value of itself, which is an extremely complicated thing to sort of comprehend, but in the sense of in the sense of that eternal return, instead of that repetition, it's a compounding repetition of legitimization, of value legitimization, which begins, of course, as Bitcoin equals Bitcoin means absolutely nothing. But in the end, Bitcoin equals Bitcoin is this pure value proposition, which eventually compounds itself to such a degree of transcendental legitimization that can mean nothing but sense, right? Not sense as insensibility, but that is the only thing that can mean anything, is Bitcoin equals Bitcoin, because that is the pure value that we're talking about. Value, pure value is probably the best way to think about it, because when we're talking about purity, we're talking about not connected to sensibility. So, you know, critique of pure reason being reason without its connection to the sensible. And we could talk of Bitcoin as pure value, value without a connection to the sensible, without the need for the vindication by the sensible. It is something before that. But before is already a problem, as you see, once you remove that linear time frame. What is before the conditioned experience, right? Time does not work in that sense. And this is, once again, the problem that you sort of get stuck in. And perhaps you could say, well, you know, James, you're being a bit of a neo-rationalist because you're getting stuck in the neo-rationalist problem of how can a human who's in a conditioned experience talk about something which is outside of the conditions that they can ever apprehend. The point is that there is a means for Bitcoin to compute the apprehension in such a way that we can finally translate what's going on into something absolute. The reincarnation of value. I mean, that's an interesting idea. Reincarnation would imply that value is dead, and I don't think value could ever die, because value is always, if we begin from the Austrian framework, which I probably would, value is of course in relation to one's subjective experience. If we're talking about value as a subjective experience as the Austrians did, what is value, the difference between what is value to humans and what is of value to the Bitcoin blockchain system, which in abstract is capital. What is value to capital is only more capital. What is of value to the capitalist system is simply production or intelligence, which you can basically make synonymous. So value, you know, the reincarnation of value is less a reincarnation and more of a continual reincarnation in that Deleuze-Guattarian sense of basically fits and starts. It dies and it just gets more production. It needs to continually die and be reborn every time so it can just be more productive. There is a big question there from Eric Dahl. How does Bitcoin affect entropy? That's just a gigantic question, which perhaps I will note it down and take some notes, because right now I'll be honest on that one, I would get very quickly lost. So, 1.09. What the word Bitcoin designates vastly overspills its recuperable human meaning. Once again, this is a point of signification, and as soon as you get caught up in signification, you're getting caught up in the philosophical quandaries of phenomenology, which is a distinctly human form of viewing something. So by doing that, when we're talking of designation, well, designation itself is still beholden to that spatio-temporal framework. So this introduction here is like basically picking apart where we would go wrong in thinking about these things. 1.11, Bitcoin establishes and, in fact, ultimately is an operational truth procedure. It is less a philosophical object, therefore, than a philosophical platform and even a philosophical automatism. This is an interesting point that, in terms of that earlier point about basically this being a new philosophical era and this being a pre-Socratic fragment, you know, what is philosophy other than the quest for truth? And in the sense that it's an operational truth procedure, it's something which won't allow anything in which is going to damage itself. In its feedback loop, we have this sort of epistemological closure where it's continually searching for a further productive capability for its own epistemological rigor, right? There's nothing in it which isn't going to be computed due to its notion, you know, its thing of being transcendental. There isn't something which is going to overtake the entire system. 1.12, the new coin suffix, as in Bitcoin, operates amphibiously between these previously distinct registers as the index of an economic ontological machine. Big B, Bitcoin, the system, goes further still. If being able to verifiably be itself makes of anything a unit in a currency system, the system itself is the being of such beings, the ultimate criterion of credible existence. In the end, the blockchain cannot be subordinated to any principle of reality whatsoever that it does not authorize itself. There's a really, there's a lot going on in this one, obviously. So one thing that I, you know, in my notes here that I've got down about this section is basically that reiteration of the point about Foucault earlier. This is also linked to in the first lecture, sorry. This is also linked to Heidegger, which comes up later on. Now, the Foucauldian point is basically that beginning of Homo economicus in the just after the Industrial Revolution, maybe a bit before. So initially you have Homo criminalis in this semantic, this is an empirical idea. So I do see Land as a continuation of this Foucauldian analysis, but far beyond that, really, right? So initially you have a semantic, and in that sense a form of sort of system of signification problem for Foucault, which is that you have Homo criminalis, which is, you know, a criminal human. And the point is that for Foucault was that once you've brought criminality, the concept of criminality into society, you no longer have just humans. You either have a human who is a criminal or a human who has the potential to be a criminal. And once you have that suffixed homo criminalis, human criminal, there is no longer a potential, you know, you're completely drawn into and assimilated into that semantic dialogue. And then he the criminalist point isn't as long for Foucault, and then he brings in the point about homo economicus, which is economizing man. And the point of that is very much the same thing, is that, well, we aren't always constantly economizing, but once you're drawn into that, you are viewing the world in a virtual sense in the form of economization, right? You're either economizing or you're not economizing. There is no longer this sort of qualificatory relationship which you can have with the world, which used to be prior. And there's some fantastic texts on this, basically about the immanentization of numeric culture into society, where basically we moved from qualification to quantification, right? The idea of, like, you know, an apple being, you know, you wouldn't really think of it as like a shiny, glossy, beautiful, juicy apple. It's more of a quantification in terms of its monetary value or its quantifiable value. And this then sort of, this is then, I think, compounded for Land that the ontology of Bitcoin itself develops a reality, like the entirety of reality, which can no longer escape from economic indexing, right? Everything now has the potential to be a dash coin, right? The coin suffix, of course, is of course important for the, and this of course sounds like a transcendent thing, you might say, but the great father of the coin suffix is Bitcoin. After this suffix point, everything is money. Everything is imminent quantifiable value, which is removed from a purely subjective value or subjective currency from a nation state, and is thus transcendental values. Okay, and there's a real connection here, I think, between the emphasis on the Deleuzian concept of virtuality and money as its potential functionality in that same imminent realm, right? In the sense that when we think of Deleuzian virtuality, you have the actual and the virtual, and you have the actual in the sense of a tree, and you have the virtual in the sense of that perceiving of the tree as perhaps planks, a wooden wardrobe of something of the sort. And in that potential, you know, and that in itself, as far as I understand, is a very mutated way of viewing the phenomenal noumenal split, simply in the form of that potentiality of the actualized object. And what's happening there, in much the same way with Bitcoin, is the complete immanentization of the of pure economy onto phenomenal reality. And it's in that bridge that Bitcoin is taking the reins of the function which allows that to happen. And that is something I would really emphasize, is that you no longer have anything. You have absolutely everything which is entirely economized. Right. And I mean, like, purely economized without prior to the sensible. Everything is being able to be absolutely assimilated and flattened onto a quantifiable realm of pure economization, in the sense that money is almost a determinant quantifiable metric for absolutely anything's productive potentiality, and the function that allows us to appropriate that entire relationship is Bitcoin. Now, there's a great question. Why privilege Bitcoin, or should we generalize this to all cryptocurrency? I think, right, even this is sort of more of a philosophy lecture. So I think the empirical determinants of how Bitcoin actually works in that empirical, mechanical, computerized sense, there is reasons as to why. One is it was developed perfectly by Satoshi Nakamoto, and you're welcome to look into the ins and outs of why that is. I mean, why privilege it is you know you've got me sort of unstuck. I mean, the Occam's razor answer would be that it was developed and it's here and it's first, and it's the thing that isn't trying to do anything else. I mean, so should we generalize this to all cryptocurrency? I'd say that when we look at all other cryptocurrencies, there's an interesting point there to be made, is that many of them are finding their legitimization in being beholden to an empirical functionality at the same time as putting themselves form as a monetary system, right? If you think of Ethereum, okay, Ethereum's primary focus is on contractual law and the removal of the need for contracts. It's taking that form of not needing a trusted third party and potentially in the future being able to apply it to even litigation, right, and law. Now, it's interesting, but that in itself is applying is storing its notion of value on an empirical, human-focused almost pastime, right? Where if we take another example, I mean, you could think of any example. I mean, Dogecoin. You could think of any type of coin, and its legitimization as anything of value is beginning from, I mean, Dogecoin, as silly as it is, and there isn't really anything there. I mean, the creators said it just took him 2 hours to create. He was making the point that you can make anything a Bitcoin type, but he's actually proved the opposite, because he had to rely on a primarily human-focused memetic form of jokery around the dog, right? So the value itself isn't actually the value itself. The value itself is based off a human pastime of being hyper-ironic and sort of annoying. Whereas Bitcoin is basically is a store of value. It's a digitized cryptographic store of value, which is based on a decentralized peer-to-peer network. And everyone else had to do anything more, because how can you can't improve on that. You can't. It's a pure store of value. How can you change that in any function other than to assimilate that store of value onto some sort of empirical, empirical functionality, such as, I'm trying to think of, you know, all the bloody coins that have been arriving over the years. Of course, there's thousands, and I'm sure if you could find one where you go, okay, actually, this one is completely pure in the sense of Bitcoin, then I'd be interested. But I don't think, you know, all the Bitcoin variants are just forks of Bitcoin, which are changing that function, that hash functionality, or, you know, the block time or things like that. They can't change it in any fundamental way, because in doing that, they have that strange reversion where they're coming back from the noumenal into the phenomenal, and basically, pardon me, making the transcendental error. Bitcoin doesn't make the transcendental error in relying on the conditioned experience. It has no anchors in conditioned reality. And of course, Eric Dahl says there, lower fees, faster transaction, less environmental damage. These are all functions. And okay, I will admit that there is a degree of it being first, it being the one that's taken the cake. And there is aspects to be improved, as you've said. And it's not immune to mimetics as anything is. And you could say, well, why are we still using this if everything else is, you know, but perhaps you could say, well, it's the one that's caught on. Maybe there probably is more to it than that. But I also think that the fact that it developed that philosophical transcendental position first, in, you know, that's astounding. So So basically, back to the point I was trying to make with the new coin suffixes, if something, it really is the absolute immanentization of the logic of capital onto the absolute, just every single minute aspect of reality, right? If something, if you're talking of potential, there is the question of can it be done is no longer a question of like qualification. It's a question of quantification in the relation to potentiality. Someone says it sounds hierarchical. I don't see how it sounds hierarchical. Absolutely everything is flattened onto that same level of quantification. So you know, you no longer have a trusted third party. It's if it can be done, it will be done. There's no reliance on the conditions. But I'm happy to answer any questions, but I will move on because I've got quite a few slides left and we haven't got too far yet. So, okay. 1.15. Because the blockchain is a transcendental reality criterion, its ultimate summation is necessarily ontologically exhaustive. Whatever it doesn't, in the end, include can only be nothing. That is, however, to get ahead of ourselves. Synonymity with capitalism, the value judgment of Bitcoin and capitalism is critical and thus transcendental. Thus, what is outside isn't an anomaly or a problem. It simply isn't. It isn't wiped from the system because it is entirely incompatible. Right? Compatibility appears at the moment the object is overcome by the inhuman. And this is where I find the two massive similarities between Bitcoin and capitalism is in that sense of they are both production threshers. If something can be used and it doesn't matter what it is subsumed into it and used in a way to both ontologically legitimize its claim as the system, the store of value, but also increase the production of itself. Someone says, what's your thought on the fact that although Tether is pegged to USDT, there is no backing behind it. The co-handling Tether just generates Tether at its own will. Tether's always interest me in the fact that I'm not actually sure how, right, it stays to one-to-one. Right, sometimes it's like 1.01 or whatever. And you could probably make a ton of money on Tether quite easily if you had a lot of money. Right, if it goes to 99, it is going to go back to $1. But there is, of course, I think something very sickening about a cryptographic currency, which is, you know, that is a cryptographic currency, which is a coward, right? Because it's stepping out of its home and relying on the ancient regime, right? It's the Robespierre of cryptocurrencies in the sense that, well, what is by the cryptographic transcendental logic of cryptocurrency, what is USDT? That's the outside bowing to the inside, and the inside, you know, that doesn't make any sense. I understand it makes sense from the human perspective, of course, and it's almost like a safety. I guess it's safe for people. And basically, what Tether seems to be is like you make a load of money in Bitcoin and then you put it in Tether to keep it safe so you don't have to pay taxes. I mean, that's the clear thing there. One issue that comes is that as Bitcoin expands, the entry cost file size to download all transactions is exponentially growing. How does Bitcoin overcome its auto growth limits like this to survive? I'll be honest, I haven't looked into that, but I mean, it would be, if the system itself is self-compounding, it would be in its interest to form a development which allows for that growth to stay at an equal level, right? So to innovate and to develop those technologies. And of course, you know, I'm someone who's sort of somewhat of a collapsitarian, so I don't really believe things until they happen, but that would be the thing that they would need to do. And to say, oh, you know, I was speaking to David Friedman just yesterday for an interview, and he sort of said something along the lines of, oh, there's no limit to human innovation, which is actually something I completely disagree with. But that is something that's being relied on in terms of Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is relying on sort of in its own logic. So in terms of how does it overcome its auto-growth limits, it doesn't overcome them, it overcomes them by retaining, you know, the ability to retain them. So the innovation of a technology which can can contain that sort of information. Hear me. Okay, so 1.18, the complex equivalence between this comparatively paltry financial evaluation and the appeal of the Bitcoin business as a venture capital opportunity, let alone as the core technology of an industrial revolution, presents a challenge of commensuration for which no existing roadmap is even approximately adequate. It is unprecedented for the principal infrastructural innovation of a techonomic long wave to take the immediate form of investment vehicle. Extraordinary non-linearity results. What does that mean? In not being tied to the inside detritus, the human detritus of the empirico significations and the internal subjective notation of a nation or a bank or a standard or etc. BTC, Bitcoin, represents in both technological, economic, and transcendental terms the value of one BTC equals one BTC. And now you can sort of begin to see why that's so important, right? Because you think of dollars, $1 equals $1, which is backed by something in God we trust, is also written on the notes, but it's also reliant on that third-party infrastructure. One BTC equals one BTC is the biggest philosophical epistemological claim of them all, because it's a virtual attempt, or a productive virtual attempt at legitimizing its own value by itself, right? To say $1 equals $1 does make sense within the logic of the US monetary system, because you still have that notion of trust, which makes that make sense. Bitcoin equals Bitcoin is an equation which in itself is productively attempting to develop the value right there. You know, there's nothing above which can then come down and go, here's why that is. Okay, so it's immediately nonsense until it isn't. Until its representational value, in representational terms, in the terms of the inside, once that representational value overtakes that of the US dollar, which I think is very, very, you know, obviously not close to happening in dollars terms, but I think in memetic terms, 5-10 years down the line, and we're getting there very, very quickly, to the point when we start, when certain countries start measuring their value in terms of Bitcoin, which is a trustless monetary form, what's happening there? You know, what, that's strange, right? That is when representation has been overtaken by the outside. The outside has truly come in then, because you're not turning to anything. You know, we trust money because it's, you know, if it goes through banks and banks do things with it, and then there's this whole thing of the mint, as I said earlier, and the nation, and it makes us feel all very secure. But that doesn't change the notion of pure value at all, does it? Just because 1,000 of people agree that something is of value doesn't mean it is. I repeated this in the last lecture, but as soon as this thing which declares itself as pure value in this algorithmically machinic sense of the outside, and that in itself overtakes the inside in terms of quantifying what value even is, well, what's happening there? You know, that is the outside coming in. So to state that X BTC equals X USD is equally to state that X USD equals X BTC, right? How much is that worth in Bitcoin? You know, that'd be $20. What's that in Bitcoin? Now, that is the momentous Copernican revolution in abstract, because one is the reliance on the human, and the other is the inhuman that is simply there. You're no longer reliant on a semantic, notary, cultured, subjective notation of value. You are reliant on a horizontal, flat, decentralized form of pure value itself that has just declared itself. Okay, meaning that a generative, competitive feedback takes place whereby the victor is that which can prove its worth in a transcendental sense of decentralized, trustless trust. BTC, you know, Bitcoin doesn't, it can't pretend to be anything other than it is. as the valuation of Bitcoin and USD increases, the valuation of USD as value decreases. But in the abstract, that is, as the pure, as true pure value increases, a metaphorical value completely obliterates, you know, the human connections are gone then. So 1.27, already in the Kantian formulation of the transcendental philosophy, the secret was distinguished from any type of concealed object. Its readout is not to be found in a transcendent mystery. It is located rather in the difference between the object and its principle. The secret of objectivity is itself concealed by the feint that leads to a misidentification with a hidden thing. You know, once again, this is that cryptographic dialogue between the two. And, you know, in the sense that its readout is not to be found in a transcendental, a transcendent mystery, in the idea that in the investigation of something within, you have to go beyond. No, it's not there. It's located within the within, but the within is cryptographically sealed in the sense of our cognitive faculties and our means of apprehension. But I don't think that has to be a neo-rationalist position. I think that Bitcoin answers that question. Bitcoin functionally answers that solves that problem between the within of the within, right? There isn't levels, there's just levels of access. So 1.31, I just put this bit in because I loved it. Since the origins of modernity, a spectre has been haunting the world, that of the autonomous industrial economy, which of course, autonomy implies a transcendental form of machinized value, because there has to be, for there to be something automatic, there has to be a node within the process of automatism which it has to rely on to understand the notion of whether or not it should continue either way. And of course, this is production, the production of production. You know, whether or not this virtual potentiality of production, or you talk about it in the terms of an increased machinization, what we're talking about in the autonomous industrial economy is there has to be within the economy itself, as we understand it, as we view it as like a market system or as an empirical place of development, there has to be something within that which can be relied upon as a node to verify the success and the continued succession of whether or not something should continue. So even in the process of autonomy comes forward some agreed upon form of value which has to come before the process of autonomization itself. Okay, so the last little bit for chapter 1, 1.33, that is why the left finds itself so commonly locked in a fight to defend what capital is from what it threatens to become. Bitcoin tells us more clearly than any other innovation what it is becoming next. By escaping transcendent governance in principle, consistent right-wing extremism, automated governance and unflinching critical philosophy are intertranslatable without significant discrepancy. The cryptocurrent is a nightmare for the left, rigorously conceived. It is other things, but that is the main one. Philosophical phase change doesn't happen without a fight, least of all when attempting to root around one. So it's a problem. I mean, a great essay to read on this would be Critique of Transcendental Miserabilism, I think. If you haven't read that, I think it's one of my favourites from Land, basically saying, yeah, well, capitalism might be this basically hyper-machinic Lovecraftian entity that is, you know, quantifying the entire cosmos into a productive thresher system. But if that makes you miserable, then anything will. So get over yourselves. And this is the leftist problem, is that, well, you can't do anything about capitalism. And this is also why, you know, I have respect for Mark Fisher's work, because at least he's one of the few leftists, you know, capitalist realism. Realism is here, right? Most leftists come at the capitalism problem with the idea that capitalism's like not here yet, or they can still be, it's like, no, capitalism's here. Anything you do will be subsumed into its work. Can I elaborate a bit on the part about neo-rats? Well, I mean, very loosely, the neo-rationalist question is basically saying
that it's tackling that unknowability question in relation to Kantianism in saying that we can never speak of what is not known outside of our ability to apprehend the world because of this Kantian problem of faculties and sensibility. And so you end up going back into this form of neo-rationalization. So a neo-rat is like, you know, it's not allowing it wouldn't allow that connection to ever be. Whereas I don't think this is a neo-rationalist position because something greater is happening. And you the best essay I think to read that would really subsume all this quite a complicated essay, but it's very well written, is Capitalism's Transcendental Time Machine by Anna Greenspan. And she makes the point that, and it's a really great essay in relation to neo-rationalism, not specifically, it doesn't even, you know, really mention neo-rationalism, but you know, the notion of time, and it's everything's time. Everything's time. If you want to understand philosophy, just look at time. Look at time and drink copious amounts of Coke Zero. There is a fantastic passage in this essay by Anna Greenspan that basically is stating, if, to paraphrase, if humans have time, past, present, future, we understand from the Kantian position that the past, the present, and future is that form of causation which is entirely reliant on the a priori forms of sensibility we need for there to be, pardon me, reality at all, which is space and time. And these things are the conditioned experience. They aren't the condition. They are the conditions of us, of for there to be experience whatsoever for us. However, for there to be any form of time at all, whether or not it even is linear, there has to be pure time. That time, even though time can't be in time, it has to be of time, right? So there's this amazingly interesting point that Greenspan puts forward, is that the outside is already in us in the sense of pure time, but is then reappropriated by these faculties into the chronic time we understand. So the outside is already in us. I mean, I'm pointing to my mind, but that doesn't make any sense in terms of representation. So the outside is already in us. So I think the neo-rationalist question is sort of, is not answered there, but there's a certain amount of tools and functionality that one can use there to open up the question. Someone said neo-rats just have a surplus of air in their natal charts. I tried to learn to read natal charts once, but I couldn't. Right, chapter 2. Cryptocurrencies critique. So 2.0, Bitcoin, it tells us, is a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. Land begins, basically, I'll just put this in to state that Land begins this chapter dealing with the specific definition of Bitcoin in relation to the actual paper itself. Was Land's PhD on Kant? No, it was on Heidegger, Trakl, and Hölderlin. And in my opinion, it was still about transcendental exit, but from a sort of labyrinthian point of view. It's called Cult of the Grapheme. It's very good. I'm sure, wouldn't agree with that. 2.02. Bitcoin is introduced as one instance of a generic set with an explicit grammatical repudiation of any claim to uniqueness. It is one among many, singled out only by its historical primacy. So that's sort of back to what we were talking about earlier, why Bitcoin, why specifically Bitcoin, and partakes fully in the extreme ontological vulnerability of the digital sign, scarcely differentiated from a copy of itself. The secure individuation of the system is something that it will have itself to build. So the double spend problem, but with regard to differentiating genuine value from representational value. It's one of the immediate questions immediate things of Bitcoin is how it stops the double spend value in that decentralized acceptance of what has happened chronologically. Everyone has agreed that certain string of numbers is transacted to there. They've spent that. That's been bought. Whatever. This money's moved to here. This Bitcoin's moved to here. This Bitcoin's moved to here. Does everyone agree on that? Yes, we do. Therefore, this can't be spent again. This can't be spent again. This can't be spent again. And in that sense, the double spend problem basically is beholden to this development of absolute time. you've solidified time. It's no longer of a question of assessing the empirical reality of a string of numbers on perhaps a banknote, or of maybe, I don't know how they used to do it with gold, because I know eventually gold was the reason we had banknotes, but I guess there would be a string of numbers on the gold slip. And you say, well, no, you've already spent this, blah, 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 blah. And it's the point of you're moving these empirical things around. Therefore, if there's one empirical thing here, there's only one, and it's, but it's, so it can't be double spent. Of course, that's the problem of in a way of digital currency, is how do you solve that problem? You solve that problem by basically solving the problem of Kantian space-time, right? And just developing absolute time. So, you know, and that the one fantastic film, which, you know, Land speaks about as well, about the double spend problem, which is just, and it's just a fantastic film on time generally, Looper. Go watch Looper. And then it's abusing that double spend problem of taking gold back in time to build a business, which then builds the gold in the future, right? And it's just a fantastic film. Now, 2.06. Modernity is what happens to history when it ceases to be one damn thing after another and succumbs instead to a self-reinforcing trend. So, once again, chronic time is overtaken by a noumenal function. And what I mean by that, you know, when Land is stating one damn thing after another is it a succession or is it, you know, a happening? There isn't a coherent, imminent factor which is either dampening or bolstering some underlying form between these events. And so the succession isn't a succession in almost like a Humean sense of causality. It all actually, in fact, it is, because it's a conclusion of Humean causality, which is these things are just happening, right? It's just like a succession of events, and that outside apparatus, if you like, doesn't have a means to, you know, there isn't this algorithmically secure means of computing the two sides and machinizing an absolute time, which can say this, 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 and in that sense can itself hold a an abstract form which allows for there to even be the possibility of autonomy, which I spoke about earlier, which is you need some factor as to what are you being autonomous towards or within, right? Autonomy, you know, you say, oh, everything here is autonomous towards what? And usually it might be production. So you're, you know, to make something more automatic, and then to make something more automatic is thus to have an abstract node unto which you are saying, well, automatic towards what? And I think for Land, that is the notion of abstract production, or production in itself, production of production. And for Bitcoin, it's production of itself. So when we, you know, Land speaks about modernity, modernity is that immanentization of zero into the culture. And I've written about zero tons and tons of times. So I just wonder if I can sort of very abstractly talk about zero, but as soon as you have zero in notational value on the outside, you on the inside, you immediately immanentize this idea of a function of profit and loss. If you have zero, you have minus, you have plus. You have the beginning of pure quantification. And from that, you can begin basically anything. You can begin to at least target yourself. If you do not have zero, you have no way to form an actual trajectory. 2.08, Bitcoin is a system. When formulated as a critical position proposition, the systemicity of the system is irreducible to any part or parts of the system. I mean, this is a cybernetic function in the sense that it is a self-compounding and self-contained system. And it, you know, once again, it was the almost the repeat of something I said earlier that wouldn't let anything in, which is damaging to that entire system itself. Much like capitalism, but it's a system of appropriation, really. 2.13, mathematization and mechanization of culture in its most all-embracing sense appears as a coherent twin process, many centuries in the making. This goes back to one of Land's lectures called The Atomization Trap, which is on Jacobite, where he, to paraphrase, he sort of says, Protestantism, atomization, the immunitization of zero, and the birth of numeric culture, and then the birth of capital, and also the birth of Kabbalah, but we won't get into that. This is like, in this mathematization and mechanization of culture, this is that extra Foucauldian sense of the absolute quantification of the cosmos, right? All these things are culminating into the synonymity of mathematization and mechanization, into that pure quantifiable ability to be like, okay, yeah, coin everything, but abstractly, before it's signified. That signification is after the fact, it's been assimilated into that pure system. someone has commented there.
Pardon me, sorry.
As of recently, the value of the Bitcoin has fallen significantly. Hypothetically, if crypto fails, then what are the implications of that on Land's philosophical interpretation of cryptocurrency? I'll delete the lectures and none of this will, you know, we'll just pretend it didn't exist. I mean, that's an interesting question. That is a really interesting question. I would sort of say at this point it's sort of unfalsifiable. Like, I don't think it changes the implications of the actual philosophical interpretation of it. I think if you really wanted to, you could sort of alter cryptocurrency if you wanted into some sort of functional metaphysical abstract or critical abstract. But Land, I think the importance is that this is something that is working on both levels. So someone says that it's not just about Bitcoin. A decrease in the value of Bitcoin does not matter, because the decrease in the value of Bitcoin, once again, you have to remember, is valued in empirical notational terms. So it's like, oh, okay, Bitcoin's decreased in value of US dollars. Well, what does that mean, right? It means loads on the subjective level of the human, but what does it mean on the inhuman level? And I think that's a good question to think about. Okay, 2.2. Bitcoin is a machine. More specifically, it is a credibility machine. It is their assumed right to be believed that speaks through intuitions of familiar truths. Now cast from their social Eden into the harsh wilderness of trustlessness, where all resilient credibility has to be explicitly earned by a demonstrated application of computational power. And the footnote here is, "In God We Trust," announced US Federal Reserve notes encouragingly. Bitcoin has dispensed with this insult to public intelligence. This notion that Land brings forward about a demonstrated application of computational power is in itself almost a fealty, a loyalty to the system, to the value system itself. To the extent that you don't need trust is to the extent that you are, you've got skin in the game, or the computation, you know, is bolstered in the sense that you've got skin in the game of the entire system of currency itself. The value, you know, the value for you is in the value that you're computing. But of course, that's, once again, that's sort of happening after the sign, because you've allowed it to happen. There's some interesting things going on there, but the trustlessness is in relation to that demonstration of, you could say, computing power, but it's also a demonstration of one's almost fealty to the system. You could almost bring in the basilisk problem here, right? What's Bitcoin gonna do if you haven't computed it enough? 2.21. When social rules are submitted to the same principle of mechanical rigorization as epistemic values, so social rules, same rigorization as epistemic values, the outcome is algorithmic governance. Although this is, of course, introduced incrementally in phases, the ideal, however, is lucidity itself. Institutions of social management are to be incarnated in software that, like mechanical calculators, are simply incapable of making a mistake. And this, once again, is the synonymity of capitalism and Bitcoin. The notion of a mistake is, once again, in relation to, you know, there's a, you know, you could read Conguillaume, you could read Bachelard, you could read Foucault. Actually, I keep bringing in Foucault, I'm not really sure why. But you could bring these people into that notion of what an error is. If you are to have an error, then there is an implication of something from which you can be erroneous. Therefore, there is a way to be correct and there is a way to be erroneous. For capitalism and for Bitcoin, that way is to not be beholden to the system and to not bolster the system, not legitimize the system, and also to not be productive. So in the sense that this is happening, everything is min-maxed in, so, you know, social rules become epistemic values. The epistemic value of what we know is a continued legitimization of, do we know this to be more productive or less productive? And everything will cater towards that, as it is doing, if people are paying attention to the world. So with regard to any epistemological system, which is computing truth algorithmically, or whether algorithmic or otherwise, the question is the value system of truth itself. Arguably, it seems that the value system of Bitcoin is one of pure value, or, you know, in Deleuzean terms, we could call it pure production in itself. The epistemological function of institutions under the algorithm of Bitcoin is to function in the direction of greater production for the sake of further production, right? So in releasing itself from the trust of God, or the trust of a third party, Bitcoin opens the airways for machinic nihilism, right? Which seeks only for its continuation. And I think maybe this is where people do get unstuck with land, is because, well, what, you know, you say, well, what, that's all you want, just production on a nihilistic production for its own sake, production thresher of the cosmos. And I would say, yes, that is exactly what that's just what we want. Please end this stupid human nightmare. Please don't cut that clip. So, you know, you could say, I'll give you the meme clip. In the sense that Bitcoin is an epistemological value system targeted at production in itself, then in the way that anything that's going on in the empirical world under its governance itself becomes targeted at production in itself and production of production, culminating in basically a cosmic, nihilistic, machinic thresher of production. And that is better than any silly human future. Cool. So, 2.24, to make the world programmable by degrees requires an installation of order or a conduction of self-organization. This is not a development restricted to the electronic epoch, to that of literate civilizations, or even to the emergence of linguistic science. Rather, it extends back to the first cellular structures and perhaps even earlier to their very poorly understood precursor chemical networks. The fundamental conception of code is implicit already in any understanding of the most rudimentary adaptive RNA molecule. Someone said, how would land account for the role electricity plays in the crypto realm? I mean, I from memory at the moment... I need to change slide. Very sorry about that. How far did I go? Oh, sorry, I didn't put these up when... Sorry about that. How far did I get? Okay, I'm about there. Electricity, I haven't seen land fully comment on electricity. Yeah, I mean, that's a problem to be solved. And if you're going by this logic of Bitcoin, it's an innovational problem. I think that would be the only thing to say is, as it grows, you know, that should grow too. And people who aren't collapsitarians, so I won't insert my own bias here, would probably say that it is in some way, even though it's not. I did insert my own bias. Very sorry. So when we're talking about, back to this quote about the fundamental conception of code, make the world being programmable, you know, land is basically saying this isn't restricted to electronic epoch, you know, computer programming, or even literate civilizations where you're programmed for productivity, like in the case of Protestantism, by, you know, the emergence of linguistic signs. Saying this extends back, right? So you're talking about order, you're talking about something that needs to cohere itself into a continual order, and this is also in the Deleuzean sense of code is production, right? And it is a machine. It has inputs and outputs, and it's producing its own production. And basically, you almost have this machinically Darwinian undercurrent of survivability. So every piece of code has components is defined by them, and it is a multiplicity, although not every multiplicity is code. So no code is a single component, because even the first piece of code draws on others and is continually building itself in relation to, once again, some implicit node, which for like RNA molecules would be just survivability and robustness, and sort of competence in that you know, in that realm. Someone said McLuhan counts for electricity. I've been talking about McLuhan a lot lately. Sort of combining the electric age with Bitcoin is an extremely interesting question, right? The medium is the message. Well, what is the medium of Bitcoin telling us? And I would say the answer is something that I've already covered already, right? The medium is the message. The medium of TV, you know, the point, you know, we could apply a McLuhan-esque application to Bitcoin right now. And we'd just use that very basic McLuhan-esque statement of the medium is the message, or the medium is the massage, or the medium is the mass age, or the mess age, as he famously said. The medium is the message, and the point of that is that the content doesn't matter. The medium itself, so TV itself as a medium, is the point. Or the iPhone itself, or social media itself as a medium, is the point. So the content of Bitcoin in terms of transactions, in terms of buying pizzas, in terms of the memetic culture that's up around it, that's not the point. What is the medium of Bitcoin telling us? And I think that's been answered in the sense that the medium itself is an abstract, pure form of value, which can be applied quantifiably to basically, literally, quite literally, anything. And in that sense, that medium is, you know, I guess in the McLuhan way, you could say a form of propaganda, which is forming the notion in us and programming us, conditioning us in a certain way to understand reality as a purely economizable, quantifiable thing. So 2.25 code and whatever it conveys in respect to meaning is not a phenomenological category, but an operational or machinic domain. And I think I sort of explained that in the last thing I just said about RNA, you know, this idea of just continually computing itself. And you'd say the innate thing of it is survivability in a way. 2.27, anything that demands belief is marked for eradication. And this goes back to that idea of trust. What happens when the trusted party goes? Well, who knows? Of course, the same question sort of applies to Bitcoin, which someone has already asked. What happens when it falls? And I think that point of there not having to be trust is what just makes it far more robust, transcendentally speaking. In other words, at 2.3, in other words, Bitcoin is a transcendental operation before becoming the topic of one. Right. Once again, before the signs, the primary meaning of transcendental is ultimate, which can be clarified negatively by the absence of any higher and superior tribunal, removal of the trust. There is no place from which to consistently or authoritatively second guess the blockchain, because you don't have that third party, which could, you know, be like commissioned or whatever. By implementing a fully peer-to-peer system, which subtracts the role of third party monitoring and adjunction, the Bitcoin protocol automatically places itself beyond external oversight and beyond, you know, it. There is, even though Landis stated that, I think it's strange to say beyond, because it removes the possibility of there being a beyond. There is nothing that can come in and say this is wrong, because the system is a complete systematization and decentralized agreement of what has happened in that absolute succession. 2.31, hash functions are codes and thus mappings from keys to values or systematic text conversions. This is, in my opinion, just basically stating the translation of one reality to another, transcendental symbolism in a way, the idea of the symbolic being, the symbolic being made imminent to code, and thus Bitcoin acting as almost a noumenal transference software, right? It transcendentally understands value. 2.311, each such event is a basic unit of time or elementary episode determining a block on the chain. Hashing and mining are made synonymous as Bitcoin's primary process. The hashing cycle establishes an ultimate, unsurpassable, transcendental, or chronogenic, meaning the history of development, the history of development. Bitcoin produces history, chronogenic, and it produces this history and legitimizes it simultaneously. So I think that's an important bit. The hashing cycle establishes an ultimate, unsurpassable, transcendental, or chronogenic function. It is developing its own history as it legitimizes it simultaneously. 2.312, a cultural side product of the Bitcoin protocol, then, is a cryptographic definition of time. Punctual, geometric, now, as in the present, as marked on a timeline, is replaced by an atomic unit of irreducible duration, coinciding with the completion of a block and ordered successively on the chain, right? Bitcoin solves the problem of Kantian time and how we can correlate the time of the outside and the inside. The only thing which isn't internal to time is time itself. So how do we focus on the internal outside, which we always seek to understand? And by doing that, Bitcoin immanentizes the algorithmically processed, economized transactions into a block, which is then decentralized and agreed upon in a decentralized network as what has happened in that duration on that level of pure value. Oh, I've got quite a bit left here. I'll have to sort of quickly get through these. To objectify the transcendental basis of objectivity, for instance, in the posing of a metaphysical question about the nature of space-time or causality, is to lead thought into hopeless error, whose symptoms are irresolvable dilemmas, contradictions, or antinomies. 2.322, modernity is the work of Quadrique, produces formal flatness. I'd like to think that's fairly straightforward by now. 2.35, the essential and continuous features of critique, abstractly apprehended, therefore, reduced to one, the articulation of transcendental empirical difference. So these are the features of critique, Kantian critique. Two, subtraction of the transcendent object in the name of immanence, removal of that trusted third party. And three, temporalization of philosophical problematics onto the ultimate gradient or asymmetric distance of absolute succession. So that is the blockchain there. 2.4, the new is as old as time. You know, the classic, capitalism is always ahead of itself. Bitcoin and capitalism are both functionally accelerative in that accelerationist sense. What can be already is. There is no such thing as neo-capitalism, and there is no such thing as neo-Bitcoin, right? There can't be. It just keeps going. The new is as old as time is the new. The new is always that continued production. 2.51, time is neither beyond nor among things in time. It is neither transcendence nor factuality, but rather the intrinsic principle of the non-geometrical diagonal line. Diagonality is something that probably will come up in the next lecture. It's very important. Decryption of immanent order is the destiny of transcendental philosophy. Immanent order being that blockchain, you know, the decryption of that into that understanding that it is a cryptographic thing. Whatever the nature of the subjectivity that will be fabricated to accomplish it. It doesn't really matter what's decrypting it, because in the decryption, you're dealing with that already prior to signs, algorithmic process. So there's a bigger thing here at 2.52, which really interests me. Accepted practice is to use Bitcoin, singular, with an uppercase letter B, and that is important, to label the protocol, software, and community, and Bitcoins, with a lowercase b, to label the units of currency. The difference between Bitcoin and Bitcoins, big B, lower B, cannot be denominated in lower B Bitcoins. It is then strictly ontological or transcendental philosophical. A genesis of objectivity is at stake, which no objectification can capture. Bitcoin is not merely Bitcoins, while also not being anything else. So it's like time then. Yes, a lot like time. Anyone who's studied Heidegger, and maybe, you know, if Lan sees this, sorry if I've just completely read this wrong, Bitcoin is not merely Bitcoins, is basically being is not being. If anyone's looked at their Heidegger, capital B, big B, ontological being, down to ontic, lower B, being. Now, so the difference between Bitcoin, big B, and Bitcoins, lower B, you can map this to the Heideggerian difference between ontological, big B, and ontical, lower B, where the former ontical is simply concerned with facts about entities and the empirical relations, and the latter is concerned quite literally with the meaning of being, with how entities are intelligible as entities, and that's in the Heideggerian notion. So using that technical language, we can put the point about forgetting of being as such by saying that the history of Western thought is characterized by an ontic or onticization of ontology, right? It's the reducement of that potential pure value system into something which is ontical. So we notice that the history of lower B Bitcoin in its symbolization of as a monetary unit is that's focused solely in that ontic sense on the empirical reality as money as this empirical exchange value, and not on the intelligibility of that value itself, right? How can such a transcendental value system be, Land emphasizes in 255, entire schools of neo-transcendental critique are able to propagate themselves within the space thus produced, nourished by the relapse of ontological difference into an ontic determination between beings or objects, which is to say, by a fall or transcendental empirical difference into mere empirical distinction. Why Land don't say it? Coin, but Bitcoin, I don't know what that means, sorry. But basically, I think it's very interesting to map Bitcoin Big B ontologically onto ontic, and you see why there's been a removal of why there's been a change in the focus of the ontic often overthrows the ontological. And what if you retreat from that Heideggerian notion back to what's implicit between the difference between those two in the Kantian sense of things, then you find that Bitcoin is bordering the two, and finding a way to compute one to the other, in the sense that the ontic finally has a trustless transcendental legitimization of its value. 2.611, we are directed diagonally or critically into the synthetic cosmos of transcendental machinery. Such mechanisms, by philosophical definition, cannot be exhaustively constituted as an object for any possible subject. Objectification, the production of objectivity, is their work. If they grasp themselves dynamically in the attainment of intellectual intuition, they close a circuit or diagonalize, dismantling all settled configurations of subjectivity upon the same oblique line at the real historical limit. Intelligence explosion cannot be framed without being metaphorically, metaphysically misconceived. Okay, so this is a very important section. The diagonality, I did think this came up this time, the diagonality of synthetic a priori judgments becomes synonymous. So we spoke about synthetic a priori judgments last time, that basically new universal knowledge which isn't in relation to the sensible empirical world, and thus there's something very interesting going on there. This is synonymous with the Landian trajectory of the means of production, right? As they seize themselves, the very process whereby they begin to produce themselves transcendentally grasps itself in a diagonal manner. It begins to produce itself in the sense that capitalism and Bitcoin both algorithmically are, and intelligence begins to understand itself and intuit and apprehend its own functionality as being able to continue itself. 2.622, time is not to be thought in any ways other than those it itself enables. This is a law deeper than any commandment. To acknowledge it is already the whole of transcendental philosophy. The inner sense, that temporal inner sense, is beholden to man. His subjectively causal determinations are reliant on such a causation for their existence to even be. As such, the blockchain develops a historical actualization of truth, an epistemological absolute of truth. You think big Bitcoin with Big B means cryptocurrency? I think I have to think on that. You also mentioned Croker. I've been meaning to read Croker. I'd never come across his work, but it looks interesting. So yeah, I think I've got two more slides. But so 2.634, Bitcoin is not only the initiation of artificial time, but the original production of absolute time, and thus a confirmation of synthetic reality's ontological supremacy. Non-decomposable space-time, which is to say space-time relativization, is the single conception that most undisputably epitomizes advanced modernity in physics, and even in the natural sciences in general, with only quantum indeterminacy as a competitor. Yet from Bitcoin, we know that the absence of an uncontroversial, objective order of succession can be translated economically into a double spending problem. The blockchain solving the double spending problem, which is supposedly unique to digital currencies, Bitcoin aimed to solve these limitations by creating a system based entirely on cryptographic proof instead of trust. You no longer have to trust something or an institution to understand whether or not something's been spent twice. In effect, it offered a way to do banking without the banks, right? When one Bitcoin owner transfers a coin to someone else, they sign a hash of the previous transaction and the public key of the next owner. This hash is then added to the end of the the Bitcoin. Therefore, every Bitcoin is like the logbook of a car. It contains a record of all previous owners. A cryptographic hash function is a mathematical algorithm that accepts a string of data, such as what is a Bitcoin, and returns a fixed-sized arbitrary string, right? So it's a one-way function, meaning that the same input always returns the same output, and you can't reverse engineer the input, right? Importantly, no two inputs will return the same output, so every output is unique, which develops into that quantifiable, objective, absolute succession of time. The chain ownership of each Bitcoin can be verified simply by looking at the signatures that make up the coin. To prove that no attempts to double spend have occurred, the blockchain provides a way for all nodes to be aware of every transaction. With Bitcoin, all transactions are publicly announced to everyone on that decentralized network. They can then agree on a single history of the order in which they were received. Bitcoin's solution to the double spending is that if the majority of the nodes agree on which transaction was first to be received, later attempts to double spend are irrelevant. Absolute time is cryptographically manufactured via that decentralized networking process. 2.636. Absolute succession of the chain. I'm just going to take a drink. Absolute succession of the chain actualizes. Finally, the distinctively non-geometric temporality of the Kantian transcendental aesthetic. Grasped philosophically as a diagonal construction, time is aligned with singularity or quasi-paradoxical absolute locality in order to secure itself against dissolution within relativistic cosmology. Wow. Thanks, Nick. That is a very complicated sentence. The Humean problem of causality, which woke Kant from his dogmatic slumber, was left uprooted by Kant, but solved in terms of ontological and critical translatability. The blockchain converges, both the inside and the outside, onto an imminent critical plane, which symbolizes on the inside, but is that thing ontologically, an absolute successive temporality, which takes as its catalyst the empirical transactions of the inside, which are computed algorithmically into time by the cryptography of the outside and synthesized into an absolute succession. So 2.64, that which most incontestably demonstrates its resilience by enduring into the future is the past. What has happened alone is realized. Time is here captured as its tenses in the execution of an ontological operation through which being is decided. In this way, the process dividing the future from the past provides a selective criterion. What has been discovered by the Bitcoin protocol is that the model contract is necessarily time-like in this sense, to such an extent that it can implement time. Here's the deal. That which is done has contractual integrity insofar as it is not easily undone. Irreversibility is the key. Okay. And once again, when we go back to the notions of irreversibility, the entire premise of reversibility is beholden to linear time. What happens outside of linear time in terms of reversing? Who knows? So this is the last little bit here. This is only to 2.643. This is only to say, critically, once again, that time itself cannot be apprehended as an intratemporal phenomenon or something in time, right? There just can't be irreversibility because you don't have versatility, you don't have going forward. Linearity isn't a thing. We're developing linearity algorithmically, machinically, calculating it by synthetic a priori. Non-geometric is not spatial, because that's back into the space and time thing. Kantian time. Okay. You can't have time in time, basically. In granting this conversion, the intrinsic solidarity of time with a teleological problem has already been conceded. It is not a going towards in sense of linearity. It is an accelerative compounding and feedback of production. There is a catalyst to the movement, but that isn't a linear movement. 2.65, it is a skeptical suspension corresponding to the status of objectivity as a production. Subjectivity is work not yet done. That which has not been earned in respect to an attribution of reality falls automatically onto the side of subjectivity. Contra the latter, inflationary German idealists, what is seen here is not the expansion of a claim, but rather the delimitation of an entitlement. There's a lot going on there in terms of Austrian economics, there is a lecture coming up on the economics, so we'll touch on that then, actually, because this lecture is going on quite long. And I've only got a couple more bits here, and then I'll take like another 10 minutes of questions. 2.7. Immanence is a selective principle, a criterion. Only consistency survives. Resolution of the double spending problem means exactly this. When conceived lucidly, Bitcoin is simply critique. In other words, a formally specified machine for dispelling metaphysics exists and is running now under conditions promoting its intensive accumulation. In this regard, Bitcoin is the inheritor of Nietzschean European nihilism, or materialized critique in its unfolded historical expression. And taken to its absolute limit, it is that positive machinic thresher I mentioned earlier. 2.71. Negatively apprehended, nihilism corresponds to a loss of transcendence, some proposed or more commonly merely accepted higher order, culturally sustained by nothing of any greater security than a dogmatic metaphysics, slides into the abyss. 2.81. Bitcoin's engine of selection is priority, primacy, or ordinal privilege, being first in line or first past the post. Bitcoin mining is a race for production. Okay, that is basically the end of the slides, the end of the lecture. I'll take sort of maybe 10 minutes of questions here if anyone's got any, but I didn't expect it to go on for 2 hours, but there we go. So yeah, if anyone's got any questions here at the end, just ask away. It's probably a lecture to go over again because there's a lot of repetition. There will be a lot of repetition in these, and I think the repetition is key to sort of try to get across these Kantian ideas. Thanks, obviously, everyone. Thanks for showing up. It's always good. Sorry about the technical problems at the start. And, you know, like, subscribe, all that lovely stuff. And if you've really enjoyed these, then possibly donate. And let me know if you'd like to see more of these. Yeah, I mean, just does anyone have any quick questions by the end, at the end here? Otherwise, I'll just I'll finish up. What do I think about relation between cryptocurrency and human culture? Do you mean that like an anthropological sense, like in terms of, you know, that move from exchange value to barter value to monetary value and then to like just pure value? You know, what happens in human culture once everything is quantifiable in the cryptocurrency sense? I mean, I know it takes is a bit of a delay, but I mean, if you mean it in that way, I guess that's a subjective appreciation of what's happening. Many people think that's great. A lot of libertarians think that's great because everything becomes quantified onto that imminent level. But equally, there, in quantification, there's many, many great books on this that I could try find if people are interested. I also wrote an entire essay on this in relation to Foucault called Foucault's Numeric Power Structure. There is, for those that are perhaps more like vitalist or Leibniz philosophy or more on the human side of things, there's a dampening of the human spirit and could even say Geist, things along these lines, in relation to that. But that's a subjective thing, and I don't think in these lectures we're really working on that framework. We're working, you know, on that machinic inhuman level. But that would be my answer. But thanks for everyone coming. There will be another one next week, and then the fourth one after that. Hopefully, I'll have it done in time. So the elimination of the need for trust in financial systems brought about by the blockchain is a pathway to the obsolescence of the human. I mean, because trust is a human notion. Trustlessness is inherently machinic, because trustlessness is the implication of some form of pure value which is understood, which can allow automatism. Trust is the idea of, you know, you have to be trusted, and that isn't a machinic value. It's not instant, obviously, but that is the beginning of the obsolescence of the human, yeah. But I am going to finish up here. Thanks, everyone, for coming, liking all that lovely stuff, like I said. And I'll probably be the same time next week, and I'll try and make sure it goes to the correct live stream next time. But that was a bit of a you know, a mistake on my part. But yeah, thanks for coming, and see you all next week.